I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a new lawsuit challenges the placement of men in women's prisons in Washington state. Plus, a notorious billionaire Democrat donor is having buyer's remorse. And Minnesota Governor Tim Walz is taking credit for federal investigations into widespread fraud in his state. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Right now, we're doing our once yearly Undivided promo. If you'd like to support our work, you can do that right now for 30% off an entire year. I think that's a pretty good deal. Just use the promo code USA30. That's USA30 at patreon.com/undivided. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to give common sense a comeback, for your support of this show. We appreciate it. I don't know if there's a more anti-women state in America than Washington state. Of course, they're so obsessed with radical gender ideology that they let men take over women's spaces, take over women's sports, and they will even allow fully intact males to be placed behind lock and key with women at the Washington State Correctional Center for Women. It is an atrocity. It's genuinely disgusting. You have these women who are at the mercy, and look, they wound up in prison for a reason, but that doesn't mean that they should be housed with men who are pretending to be women and be subjected to abuse and sexual assault. It is genuinely disgusting. But today there is a lawsuit to try to make things right. The lawsuit is being filed by the America First Policy Institute. They announced it late last night. I got a message from one of their attorneys, and I was just overjoyed because, of course, we've been talking about for several years now these stories involving these women behind bars who are mortified, who are being subjected to violence and intimidation and sexual abuse and daily fear about being housed with men who in Washington don't have to go through any sort of surgical interventions or anything at all. They just have to say, I've decided I'm a woman and I want to spend my years behind bars, not placed with the men, but placed with the women. So this lawsuit is filed in the District Court for the Western District of Washington. It's a federal lawsuit that's going to be very important and I think very beneficial to the plaintiffs here. The plaintiffs in the case are the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism, Fair for All, and Faith Bohr Smith, who is an inmate incarcerated at the Washington Correctional Center for Women. It is filed against the Washington Department of Corrections and Tim Lang, who is the secretary of the Department of Corrections. So in it, it talks a lot about a biological male who's placed, who today is in the women's prison in Washington state. Their name is Christopher Williams. He is 6'4", biologically intact, and a convicted child sex offender who was transferred from a men's prison to WCCW after self-identifying as a woman. And I mentioned one of the plaintiffs here who is currently incarcerated with him, Faith Bohr Smith. According to this complaint, it says she was violently attacked by a male inmate, Christopher Williams, at the Washington Correction Center for Women for apparently no reason known to Ms. Bohr Smith. Williams approached her silently from behind, struck her on the side of her face with his fist, then grabbed her hair and threw her to the ground before kicking her repeatedly with such force that she sustained visible injuries, including facial bruising, a laceration in her mouth, and swelling to her jaw and eye. Not the first time that Christopher Williams has been accused of misconduct against women while in the women's facility. The complaint notes that the Department of Corrections has long been aware of the threat Williams and other male inmates pose to females at WCCW. Williams' violent, predatory behavior toward other female inmates led to another woman, former inmate Mozzie Clark, to file two lawsuits against the Department of Corrections in December of 2024. We talked about that case. Ms. Clark alleged that Williams sexually assaulted her for months during the time she was forced to share a cell with him. Williams, and forgive me for the language, but I want to read it because it's important. Williams masturbated in front of her, groped her while she slept, and repeatedly threatened her with rape. During these episodes, prison staff ignored concerns for her safety and even discouraged her from filing official complaints, cautioning her against potential retaliation. That's how we treat women in Washington state. That's how we treat for a party, a state run by Democrats that talk all the time and push policies, taking it easy on criminals and criminal justice reform. And oh my gosh, we need to make sure that we're, you know, not even putting people in prison, but treating them while they're there. And I agree that if not for any other reason than for liability reasons, these are de facto wards of the state. And anything that happens to them behind bars becomes a liability for the state of Washington. But this is about humanity. This is about not locking women up with, in this case, a 6'4", fully intact male who's a convicted child sex offender. And you think about the state of Washington puts him and his fantasy about being a woman ahead of the safety, health, and well-being of those real women. It's genuinely disgusting. So Leanne O'Neill, who's the chief legal affairs officer at the America First Policy Institute, is nice enough to join us today to talk about the case. Leanne, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I was just sharing with you, you know, before we started, that these women are so lucky to have people advocating for their safety, because I think a lot of people would just say, oh, they're inmates, you know, whatever happens to them is their own fault. How long have you been working on this case?
Almost 2 years now, actually. So we've been in touch with the women, have worked with so many passionate advocates that are there locally in Washington who really care deeply about this cause. And we've just been so fortunate to be able to bring this lawsuit in defense of these women.
Yeah. And I guess answer to that question that I don't think any of our viewers will feel this way, but anyone who might feel like, well, they committed a crime, they're in prison in Washington, why do you care so much about what's happening to them behind bars?
So, I mean, obviously they're humans, right? So never to be discounted. People obviously make mistakes. There are a lot of reasons that one might end up behind bars. And, you know, in addition to just wanting to make sure that, you know, the folks that are being taken care of, their wards of the state in this case, are given the same rights as everybody else, the ones that they're entitled to under the Constitution. You know, I think it's really important that we take every opportunity we can to defend biological reality, right? So this isn't just about the mistreatment of these women, and it very much is about that. It's a huge part of it. It is also about standing up and saying, enough is enough. We're not playing games. We're not pretending that men can become women. That's not a thing. And so, you know, when there are opportunities in the legal sphere to drive that point home with litigation, we want to take them up.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the course of putting this case together over 2 years, can you talk about some of what these women have endured?
Sure. So, you know, what's really remarkable is that one of the plaintiffs we're representing is Fair for All, and they're a nonprofit that is very invested in defending biological reality. Also, some of their members are inmates at WCCW, and they have received more than 50 reports from 50 individual unique women who are inmates at the facility about complaints that those women have filed administratively with the facilities to say, look, this is not okay with us. We are having post-traumatic stress episodes. We can't sleep. We have faced stalking, not to mention the threats of sexual assault. I mean, some of the wildest stories you can possibly imagine at the hands of these males who all they had to do was self-identify as a woman. They filled out a nice little form for their gender-affirming housing preference. And that's really it. That's all there is to it. And so they have the benefit of living where they're most comfortable, rooted in their gender identity. The women, the females, don't have a say in this. They have nowhere to go. They're locked in these spaces. They're sharing intimate spaces, bathrooms, showers with males, all against their own will. And so really, I've kind of gotten tired of saying sometimes I can't believe it, that I still can be surprised by some of the things that I learn. But it really is, you know, it seems on a week-to-week basis, there's another story that actually does surprise me.
Yeah, and my understanding is these men, some of them are fully intact. Like they, for lack of a better phrase, I mean, they haven't had anything done to get rid of their manhood or anything like that, correct?
That's exactly right. And the female inmates we talked to, can verify that because they can't get away from naked, intact males. I mean, they don't have the luxury of privacy or modesty.
Yeah. So talk about the basis for the suit. One of the things I thought was interesting, so we're talking about a violation of two constitutional amendments, primarily. The Eighth Amendment is a, I wouldn't have thought about that, but cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, how cruel and unusual to be locked in a cell with a man.
Exactly. If you imagine the things that you might expect once becoming incarcerated, being forced to be housed with someone who is capable of impregnating you is not among them. And that is really squarely the, one of the most important parts of this lawsuit, the claim under the Eighth Amendment. It's hard to imagine anything more cruel and unusual than that prospect.
Yeah, so talk about the argument here for the 14th Amendment violations.
Right. So really there are several components to that. But the 14th Amendment guarantees the same rights, equal protection under the law, and that applies to sex, right? And so, this has some of the similar components if we're looking at the way that some of the sports cases have gone, Title IX, where we are working to see the courts recognize that biological sex is a distinct category and it deserves greater constitutional protection than gender identity. And so that is a critical component of this case, too. The women, the females, are not being given the same protection that the males are being given. For example, there are 11 state prisons in Washington state. The website that lists out and describes all of them used to mark 9 of them as for men and 2 of them for women. Now, 9 of them are listed as for men and 2 of them are for adults. So now there are no longer any prisons in Washington state designated specifically for females. And there's also so many instances and complaints of the women not being able to get necessary medical treatment. Meanwhile, the males are given bras, laser hair removal, fancy razors, every luxury one could imagine associated with being a female, but except the actual females can't get basic healthcare needs taken care of, which includes our named plaintiff, who was beaten by a man, a 6'4" intact male, and she's still struggling with the harms that were caused in that assault.
It's, and again, I hate to use the phrase unbelievable, but it's crazy that this is the reality that we're living in, that this scenario even exists. And I've always saw this, in addition to being just deeply, deeply wrong and inhumane and unscientific, I've always seen it as being a liability to the state of Washington. So what's the relief that you're seeking on behalf of your clients?
So for our named plaintiff client, Faith, she has actual, monetary damages that are, you can write them out on a piece based on the physical harm that she suffered. And so those are going to be claimed in the part of the lawsuit. But, kind of the overarching main point of this lawsuit, in addition to seeking the recovery of her damages, is having this policy overturned. We're asking the court to say that this policy, the housing policy in Washington state, is unconstitutional, that it cannot stand. It does not comport with the Eighth and the 14th Amendments.
So is this going to go through the federal system? Is this a case that could end up in the U.S. Supreme Court?
Absolutely. So we filed it in the Western District, U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington. And, we've seen how things have been going in the Ninth Circuit. So we'll be watching carefully, but we are definitely committed to taking this all the way to the top if that's necessary.
Yeah. Well, bless you guys for doing this work at the America First Policy Institute. I know that it's not cheap to go against the state of Washington. Is there any way that our viewers can help if they're interested in financially helping with this case?
Yes, thank you so much for asking. Yes, we would love for people to visit our website, americafirstpolicy.com, learn more about the work we're doing. this is not the only issue that we take up. We deal with several other issues. And so we would love for folks to visit our website, learn more about us if they feel so compelled to contribute. That's wonderful.
All right. Well, thank you for standing up for the women that the male leaders in our state will not stand up for. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yep. Anti-women leaders. Nick Brown, anti-woman. Bob Ferguson, anti-woman. Can you believe what they're subjecting these women to? It's genuinely disgusting. And also, you know, having been, and I say this all the time, I mean, I have a sketchy family history for sure, and having had loved ones incarcerated, never a woman, but I can't imagine. Let's say my sister did something. I'm just thinking of what woman in my life would be most likely to wind up behind bars. I don't know for what, Miranda. I do apologize. I'm using you as an example. Can you imagine, though, in all seriousness, a woman you love who did something, made a mistake in their life, being incarcerated with a biological man? And a child sex offender, no less. There's also a double murderer who said, oh, I'm a woman, and was able to get transferred to the women's prison. And I think maybe they got sent back over some repeated violations, but still killed two people. So we're talking about vile, violent men being housed with women who have no way out. There's only one women's prison. It's insane that it's allowed to continue. And I hope that these inmates do get a big fat check from the state of Washington, because somewhere along the line, this has to change. And if they're not going to change their minds because it's the right thing to do, then maybe they'll change their mind because they continue to lose lawsuits. I don't know, but we will be following that one for sure. All right, everyone, fraud investigations are so in vogue right now. Don't you love that? I give Nick Shirley credit for that. I think a lot of media organizations and government entities seem to be more eager to look into and investigate allegations of fraud after what Nick Shirley did in Minneapolis. So by all means, we'll have a story that the Seattle Times did on potential fraud first. Summer is right around the corner, although it was so depressing. We had all those really nice sunny days, and then just like that, it was cold again. I don't know what's going on, but Valentine Roofing's schedule is definitely filling up for roof replacements. So I'll give you three reasons why you should pick up the phone, call Valentine today. First, you can beat the summer rush. So if you lock it in today, you can still get your roof started in as little as 3 weeks. If you wait a little longer, it might take a little longer. And then when the nice weather hits, if you get it done now, you're going to be enjoying your backyard instead of worrying about your roof. And this is important, with the increased cost of crude oil, material prices are going to go up. Shipping prices are going to go up. So lock in your price now before the market absorbs all those price increases. Call 206 Roofing today. 206 Roofing today. You'll get a clear estimate you could trust, and you'll be supporting a local business that supports us, which is really critical. So when you see the red Valentine van in your driveway in your neighborhood, you know that someone's getting the Valentine experience. 206 Roofing. 206 Roofing. To lock in your estimate today. All right, this from the Seattle Times. Hey. Okay, Seattle Times. Even though I have a segment called "The Seattle Times is Trash," it doesn't mean that you can't do good journalism sometimes. More of this, less of the unhinged nonsense. This is the headline from the Seattle Times. Investigation uncovers $800,000 in payments to King County employees' family members. I think this is a kind of fraud. And look, there hasn't been a criminal allegation here, but my opinion is that this is fraud. I think that one thing that goes underlooked a lot before I dive into the details of this is fraud via nepotism. Are contractors and subcontractors who get all this money from some sort of government entity, and they use it to enrich their family members, regardless of how equipped their family members are to actually carry out the work. We saw this with the Black Lives Matter movement. Remember the head of BLM, like, hired her, was it her brother or something, for security, and was paying him an insane amount of money to provide security services? Stuff like that, it's very odd. So again, the headline, investigation uncovers $800,000 in payments to King County employees' family members. So it says, a King County employee, and again, a nexus to criminal racial justice, a King County employee who ran a youth education and anti-racism program oversaw more than $800,000 in grant payments to five family members as red flags passed unnoticed for years. The program manager, Yolanda McGee, also reportedly pressured three contractors to hire or subcontract with their daughter, a recent county investigation found. McGee ran a $10 million program and didn't tell her supervisors that several family members were getting paid through contracts she oversaw. But there were signs. Officials got a complaint about this in 2020, and they didn't investigate it. Now, why didn't they investigate? my opinion is, because in 2020, how much money were they doling out for these race and social justice programs? I mean, I remember when the CHOP thing was forming, and they were handing out money like it was candy to all these, you know, BIPOC organizations. I mean, literally trying to get them to, like, stop the rioting. I mean, remember the, God, what was his name? Andre Taylor, I think it was. He was the former pimp, convicted pimp, who they were hiring to be a street czar. And, like, they didn't do anything with the contract, and they just quietly tried to get rid of it. I mean, if it was BIPOC, if there was a nexus to BIPOC or race and social justice, it was like, take the money, we won't ask any questions, and it would be racist to look into how you're spending it. I think that's probably what happened here, because they get this complaint in 2020. They don't do anything about it. So who did she help divert some of this money to? Let's see. One of her brothers got $353,000. That's a nice sister, isn't it? Why can't my siblings funnel me $353,000? A cousin got $168,000. Her daughter got $132,000. She even got her sister-in-law involved. Usually you don't like the in-laws, but in this case, the in-law gets $105,000. And another brother got $52,000. She must not like that brother as much. Mm-hmm. The other brother, $353,000. And look, that's insane. I mean, that's absolutely insane. And the fact that they got a complaint about it in 2020, didn't bother looking into it. And what was their excuse for it? According to the Seattle Times, no one in the department followed up on the complaint because, what do they always blame things on? The pandemic. It was a chaotic period for the health department during the height of the pandemic. Staff later told an independent investigator, yeah, we got this allegation of fraud, or, you know, that she was diverting funds to her family members, and the pandemic, we were very busy. Because it says that complaint came in 2020. It was an email to multiple county employees, including the public health department, which at the time was home to her program. The sender, an ex-employee of a county contractor, complained about being unjustly fired and accused McGee of a, quote, glaring conflict of interest involving her daughter's work. I'm also reminded of the investigation that we did, the whistleblower report we did, into another BIPOC-related, you know, race and social justice program, the Covenant Homeownership Program, and then also the Community Reinvestment Program, where you had, you know, King County BIPOC nonprofits who, like the Urban League, who were using that money, contracted to use the money, and what did they do with it? Well, they gave it to friends, and they gave it to family members. One of them helped their daughter buy a house, gave her like $300,000, I mean, part of $300,000. To offer a down payment for a home. And if you worked at the Urban League, you were connected. So I think a lot of this happens. And hopefully now that fraud investigations are sort of in vogue, I mean, gosh, we just did a story on the show yesterday about how a Seattle City Council member and a King County councilman, both Democrats, over failed audits want to defund the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. I never thought I'd live to see the day when Democrats wanted to defund a major part of Washington State's homeless industrial complex. So I love it. I think that we might be able to convince Bob Ferguson to do away with the income tax plans because we'll save and recover so much money by investigating fraud. Wishful thinking? Yes, I suppose. All right, we'll get to a double dose of unbelievable coming up next. First, we have so many undivided viewers and listeners who have taken the First Mark Challenge over the last several years and saved big on their insurance deeds. Mike and I, we just got our renewals, and I think whenever you're about to get your insurance renewals, you're always bracing yourself for an increase. No, we're saving thousands of dollars for the same kind of coverage. In fact, we upped our umbrella coverage at home. We doubled it, and we're still saving money. And we wouldn't be able to do it without First Mark taking care of all of our insurance needs for us. They'll go out, they'll search dozens of major carriers to find you the best price and coverage. And should you ever need that insurance, you pick up the phone, skip the tree bot, you talk to a real person. And they do the same for local businesses as well. We are insured through First Mark for our business insurance. They've helped thousands of Washington families successfully manage the complicated world of insurance, save them thousands in the process, mine included. So be the next First Mark Challenge victory. Take the First Mark Challenge now. It's totally free. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. Da, 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 da. Nick Hanauer might be the most annoying rich person on the planet. Now, I don't know what he's up to these days because he still has me blocked on X. So in case you're not familiar with Nick Hanauer, Nick Hanauer runs a venture capitalist firm in Seattle, and he's been one of the biggest donors and supporters of the Democratic Party in Washington state and of some of the efforts to, for instance, when Let's Go Washington ran all those anti-tax measures that made it to the ballot, he was pumping money in to try to make sure that the tax measures would stay in place. He was also a big supporter of the capital gains tax. And then about a month ago, rumors started to circulate that Nick Hanauer maybe wasn't too happy with the tax climate in Washington state. There were rumors, I think so far unverified, that he'd fled Washington state or redomiciled to avoid certain taxes, which of course struck me as, if true, incredibly hypocritical, considering he's supported the politicians who have created this tax climate and he's supported some of the actual taxes. Well, now he did an op-ed in GeekWire while we were gone. We weren't here to cover it, so I had to cover it today, talking about what a bad idea Governor Bob Ferguson's income tax is. The headline, opinion, which capitalism are we defending? And it's a very long op-ed, and it gets to all these like very heady sort of ideas around capitalism and taxation and stuff. But I just want to point out a couple things he said. He said, the most recent legislation to tax income above $1 million is sensible on its own. It's the combination of everything piled on top that makes our state so unattractive, making the total tax burden here 5 to 10 times the alternatives isn't progressivism, it's stupidity. And he goes on to say, recent efforts to make Washington the least attractive place in the country for wealthy citizens are producing a stampede to other states. Virtually every wealthy friend I have has either left or is planning to. It's a catastrophe. Okay, before I point out the obvious hypocrisy of his statements, I just want to point out that he's saying virtually every wealthy friend I have has either left or is planning to, which totally undercuts a key Democratic talking point where they say, what have they argued? There will be no capital flight over this.
For those saying us rich folks will leave if taxed, I can promise you we won't pack up en masse.
There's a myth floating around today and yesterday.
It's a myth.
That capital will leave Washington, this whole concept of capital flight.
The idea that we have capital flight, I have not seen any evidence of that whatsoever.
Weird, because now one of your biggest donors is saying that virtually every wealthy friend I have has either left or is planning to leave, and he calls it a catastrophe. But we already knew that there has been capital flight. I mean, Jeff Bezos was the first example, major example of capital flight after they passed the capital gains tax. He moved to Florida, and then Howard Schultz moved to Florida. We've had people on this show saying, I'm going to leave. AI startup investors, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, and now Nick Hanauer. Again, you can call me a liar. You can ignore the evidence that's right before you, but your buddy Nick Hanauer, progressive donor billionaire, is saying all my friends are leaving. So capital flight is a very real thing. It's already happening in earnest. But, you know, he puts this article out and it's like, as if I didn't already find him so objectionable. You have to understand the hypocrisy of what he's saying, because remember, he's not even taking issue per se with the income tax on millionaires. He says the policy is sensible on its own, but he said it's a combination of everything that's been piling up that makes our state so unattractive to the wealthy. You know who was the number one fan of the last tax they passed on the wealthy? Nick Hanauer. In fact, in GeekWire, not 3 years ago, he published this, 7 reasons why the capital gains tax is good for Washington state. Fast forward 3 years and he's like, oh, you've made this a really inhospitable state for the wealthy. And it's because this is all about him. Nick Hanauer made his money by being an early investor in Amazon. And he had his wealth event where he sold a lot of stock before the capital gains tax went into effect. So capital gains wasn't really going to impact him. He already made all his money. So he wasn't going to have and probably isn't going to have another major wealth event that would subject him to the capital gains tax. So it was easy for him to act like, oh, this righteous billionaire, and saying, yes. And he even wrote another article I saw saying, the rich can still afford that yacht, even with the capital gains tax. He's already bought his yachts, you know? He's already bought his big things. So it was fine because he could look like the good guy. But now? Oh no. Now the income tax on millionaires, harder for him to avoid. So now it's a problem for him. It's just so rich. It's so rich, isn't it? Not to mention that he has funded many of the Democratic candidates that have made these policies and supported many of the Democratic ideas and progressive ideas and policies that have created this hostile environment in Washington state. As disingenuous as it gets, and that's why I am proud to be blocked by Nick Hanauer, because apparently my truth bombs are just too much for him to lay eyes on X. All right, let's get to a double dose of Unbelievable. All right, so as you know, Starbucks is going to Tennessee. At least they say it's a second headquarters. But every story that comes out about this makes it more and more, I think, likely that what they're really trying to do is move their operation to Tennessee, a place that's much more tax friendly. Latest story, this from the Center Square. Starbucks disclosed on Tuesday that a new regional office in Nashville will employ 2,000 employees within 5 years, including additional Starbucks employees who are now based in Seattle. This is after they announced in March that they would be moving sourcing teams that manage global and North American procurement operations from Seattle to Nashville. So it just, like, every time a news story comes out, it becomes clear that more and more of the footprint is moving to Tennessee. And not a surprise, there's a lot of reasons we highlighted them on the show where for any business, Tennessee is much more advantageous. You know, I gave one example of in Seattle, where their current headquarters is, there's a tax on high-paying jobs. So Starbucks is penalized for every job. I think it's over like $130,000 or something. In Nashville, they get a tax credit of like $4,000 for every high-paying job that they bring to Nashville, Tennessee. Total opposite. Why would you not move your business there? And there's a thought that, you know, Starbucks was born here, it grew here, maybe they have some sort of sentimental connection to Seattle, but I think all that was thrown out the window when the new socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, one of the very first things she did after being elected is protest Starbucks.
I'm proud to say, loud and clear, I am not buying Starbucks, and you should not either.
Okay, cool. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen when at every stage you vilify a corporation that has done so much for the city and has given so much to the city and created so many jobs in the city? It's like they have, yeah, there might be some sentiment there, but Howard Schultz already dipped for Florida. So whatever sentiment he had is long gone. And at the end of the day, it's a business. And you're going to make business decisions. Now, I have to laugh. Katie Wilson has been notorious already. She's only done a job for like 5 months. And she's already notorious for either dodging the press entirely, like leaving out the back door of press conferences, or just refusing to answer questions that she doesn't want to answer and walking away. So Cairo 7, a lot of credit. I don't know who this reporter is. I've never seen him before, so I should figure out his name and give him credit. They confronted Katie at a recent press conference that was unrelated to the Starbucks situation. And surprise, surprise, what did she try to do?
This is a chance for us to ask you just your thoughts about it. And is there any concern about other businesses leaving?
Because this is a big Starbucks in Seattle.
This is, again, not the subject of our press conference.
Yet when she finally answered.
So Starbucks' expansion to Nashville has been in the works for years.
Lie.
Seattle will remain their North American HQ, and we're confident of that.
I mean, the audacity. This is not what we're here to answer questions on. She does that all the time. It doesn't matter. You don't get to decide. If you're having a press conference or you're available out in public, you don't get to decide what questions the reporters ask. And it just makes her look unprepared and silly, which isn't a surprise because she has no experience that would have qualified her to be the mayor of Seattle. And also what she says there is a lie. And even the Seattle Times has debunked it. Back before she was elected, Starbucks was looking to move some of its operations out of Seattle, but not out of Washington state. They were looking at Bellevue. Like a lot of Amazon moved jobs to Bellevue. They were looking at just still in Washington, but a more tax-friendly place. And so it would have been a lot better to keep those jobs in Bellevue as opposed to have them go to Tennessee. But it was after she was out protesting Starbucks, after she got elected, that Starbucks decided, okay, we're going to look elsewhere. We're going to look out of the state. And it was after the income tax. That was the big thing. The income tax on millionaires, it became clear Washington state as a whole is going to try to have, you know, Seattle-like policies. And so we need to look elsewhere. And so they looked to Tennessee, which I think is a much better business decision. So just ridiculous. And so she dodges a question. And then when she finally answers it, she lies about it. Unbelievable, you might say. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. Tim Walz has no shame. Is he the most, can you imagine if Tim Walz had been elected the vice president of the United States? I mean, and with Kamala Harris, would there have been a more incompetent duo in the history of any country or nation on the planet? Insane. He's at it again. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Are you concerned about how what's happening in the Middle East might impact your retirement portfolio? These are all things that you can and should ask our friend Zach Abraham about. You can get a free one-on-one Know Your Risk portfolio review. Think of it as a second opinion for your retirement portfolio. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com to schedule one. Zach and his team will help you understand the real fundamentals of value investing, do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap, which I think is just a good thing every day, right to your inbox, help you understand what's happening with the markets directly from our friend Zach Abraham. All right. So the feds are raiding some Minnesota daycares, of course, including the Quality Learning Center, which I love because it closed down. But they're raiding it anyway, maybe hoping there's some documents in there that'll point to something. This is from the Minnesota Star Tribune. FBI raids 22 sites in Minnesota fraud probe. The Department of Homeland Security said that the search warrants were related to what it called the rampant fraud of U.S. taxpayer dollars. A spokesperson for the Department of Justice said today the FBI, with federal, state, and local law enforcement, is involved in court-authorized law enforcement activity as part of an ongoing fraud investigation. They talked about the 22 search warrants and how it's targeting fraud investigations. And, as I said, they served one of those warrants on the former Quality Learning Center from Fox News. Which I think the sign came down. You know, thinking about how crazy that was with specifically the Quality Learning Center. So do you remember that it was, so Nick Shirley does the video, and then the state and the people who ran that center said, oh, he just came at the wrong time. The very next morning, they had all these Somali families and children flooding the parking lot and coming into it. And then the day after that, it was closed down. And the state said, actually, the Quality Learning Center hasn't been operational for like several weeks.
Oh, whoops.
So it was all like, oh, why were the kids there bright and early in the morning? Oh, and then they tried to fix their sign overnight. So Nick Shirley released the video. So then they came and they were photographed in the middle of the night.
Replacing.
Adding an N, trying to add an N to the Quality Learning Center. It's just absolutely glorious. So, and this is after a lot of fraud was uncovered in Minneapolis over many years, in Minnesota at large. Some of it related to autism programs, some of it related to pandemic era programs to feed needy families and children. And here is Tim Walz, who's governed all of this, who's been the governor during this period of rampant fraud where people were clearly able to very easily get away with it for long periods of time. I kid you not, he says this. If you commit fraud in Minnesota, you're going to get caught. And that's exactly what we saw today. We catch criminals when state and federal agencies share information. Joint investigations work and securing justice depends on it. Where do I even start with that? First of all, he's acting as if the only reason they didn't catch it prior is the federal government was keeping information to itself. That doesn't make any sense at all. And then you say joint investigations work. Geez, well, maybe you should get rid of your sanctuary policies then and help the feds with some joint investigations to get these fraudsters out of the country. But of course, you won't do that. And then if you commit fraud in Minnesota, you're going to get caught. Yeah, but after how many years and after how many millions of dollars in taxpayer funds are sent to Somalia never to be seen again, that you will never, ever, ever be able to recover for the taxpayers of Minnesota and the United States of America. Very similar to what you saw. And that's why I say, you know, now catching fraudsters is sort of in vogue, because now he's bragging about catching fraudsters. Newsom did the same thing, remember? He made fun of Nick Shirley, called him like a creepy pedophile for going into these child cares in California, made fun of him, undermined everything that Nick Shirley exposed. And then what did he do? Him and the AG in California all of a sudden took credit for, in California, we're fighting fraud. We're arresting fraudsters. It's because they know that finding fraud and recovering taxpayer funds is a very popular thing. No matter if you're left or right, you don't want your tax money stolen. And so that's, I think, what they're starting to realize. And so now all of a sudden they're jumping on the bandwagon and they want to make it seem like we were doing this all along. We've been fighting fraud and taking it seriously. Nick Shirley uncovering it has nothing to do with it. These search warrants would not have been served if Nick Shirley hadn't been in Minneapolis with his cell phone documenting the Quality Clearing Center and the like. So just Tim Walz. I mean, oh my gosh, could there have been a worse scenario for America? And we still might get Kamala Harris. She's still talking about running again, but I don't think that Tim Walz would be her running mate this time. I think
I don't think she could make it past the Newsom of the world.
Either one of them are great. I don't think either one of them can win. Americans don't like phonies. And Kamala Harris, for all her issues, Gavin Newsom is the king of phonies. And I think people want authenticity. And that's what they get with Donald Trump. Maybe too much authenticity, to be frank. But he's not going to be able to be president of the United States. Bookmark it. All right. Let's talk about redistricting really quick, because there's some oddities happening around the country. It's also the subject of our daily subscriber show poll today. So, of course, Texas was like the OG for trying to redistrict before the midterms. And I said at the time I didn't support what Texas was doing. And they were trying to basically make more districts red. And the Supreme Court is going to let them do it. So Supreme Court hands GOP a redistricting win by striking down lower court block on Texas map. So a lower court had blocked the Texas redistrict, the redistricted version of the Texas map. And the Supreme Court says, nah, all good. Go ahead, move forward. The Supreme Court handed down a victory for the Republican Party on Monday, striking down that lower court ruling. The court hung its order on reasoning from a previous ruling in Abbott versus League of United Latin American Citizens. The three liberal justices, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, dissented. The decision comes after the Supreme Court temporarily greenlit the state's map in December and California's map in February. Because Texas did it, and then Newsom came out and put together this big thing, and voters approved redistricting in California. Both states spearheaded the mid-cycle redistricting fights that have now been cropping up across the country. The high court's approval of both states' maps, giving Republicans and Democrats five-seat advantages, respectfully, served to cancel each other's efforts out ahead of the 2026 midterms. So Texas did it, California did it in response, and then also remember, Virginia just had voters in a special election. I think the election was like on the 21st of April. Virginia voters approved a dramatically changed congressional map. And it's so, when you look at it, and I realize if you're listening to the podcast, you won't be able to see it. Look at 7. When you talk about gerrymandering, so they redistricted it to get rid of all but one Republican congressional district. All but one. All the other ones in the shape that they did it. And I'll even say on that initial one, I mean, yeah, no, that one, that initial one is fine. They're all pretty much like, you know, in chunks, right? You look at the proposed districts, look at 7.
It's like a Lego or like a some sort of Lego puzzle piece.
Look at 7 and 1 and 11. 5. They really just, all of them. 7 looks like a shrimp. No, 6 kind of looks like a shrimp. One of those big shrimp, the jumbo shrimp you wrap in bacon. 2, what's going on with 2 there? Absolutely crazy. And in Virginia, a different result. So a lower court in Virginia blocked the State Board of Education from certifying the results of that April 21st redistricting referendum, which Democrats won. And the Supreme Court of Virginia will not rehear it. They're saying that they've denied the appeal for now. And so in Virginia, voters just approved this, but Virginia might not be able to implement this new heavily Democrat-favored map ahead of the midterm elections. So it still looks like we're looking at a canceled out situation between Texas and California. If somehow, some way, Virginia is able to make this stick, that would dramatically change things, certainly in Virginia. But for now, it's not being allowed to move forward. I asked you guys in our subscriber show poll, do you support these current redistricting wars? I think redistricting wars is a better way to refer to it. Because it's like, I mean, I don't. Because you might be able to look at different individual states having different rationales for doing it. But at the end of the day, it just leads to these redistricting wars where you're going to have one state do it, and another state's going to justify it, and another state's going to justify it. No, stick to the regular process and the regular schedule for redistricting. Nicole, yay or nay?
Yeah, I'm going to go with you on that one, mostly because Democrats just seem to be better organized in figuring this out. And Texas was able to do it. Not a lot of other red states are going to get it together to try something like this. And you're right. It's just a silly war.
What's the end? To what end? Right?
It's silly.
But it goes towards what I said on the show yesterday, which is I think we're heading toward no swing states and like all blue, all red. And whether that's good or bad for America, I tend to think it's bad because then you have no president is trying to appeal across party lines because they don't need to. Because they're not trying to win any swing states or whatever it is. 90% of you said no, you don't support this, these efforts. 10% said yes. Let's see.
But do they not have to work harder to maybe get a state then?
Well, no, like, but if you solidify states as red or blue, then really every presidential election ahead of time would kind of be decided because it would depend how the states shook out.
But well, that's what I mean. So who's ever the loser is going to have to come closer to the middle to try to win over anybody they can.
But they'd be the only side that would have to come over.
Right.
So
then you'd have, maybe you'd get back to some middle ground somewhere. I don't know.
Well, if it's more blue, if more states are blue.
Right.
They could just do whatever they want. Right. Right.
Yeah. It'd be one election after another. Yeah. Having to go back and forth.
Yeah. Jeff, hell to the no. This out in the open gerrymandering, as well as to the backroom pay to play corruption and fraud. Yeah. The one thing I took away from school, gerrymandering bad, gerrymandering wrong. And now everybody's just doing it. Christine, I think districts should be geographically specified by something like a grid. This would ensure more voices are heard. It would also solve the current complaints about racial or ethnic focuses. We are all Americans and should all have a voice. I'm looking forward to the actual census and what the deportation efforts show, because it's crazy that illegals count toward how many congressional seats your state gets. I also think you're going to have blue states that are going to lose congressional seats because of the population flight. Like from, I think California, they're already saying is going to lose a ton. Like California, Washington, you have this flight to states like to red states like Texas and Tennessee and Florida. So I do think you're going to see a problem for Democrats come the next census for sure. Casey and Seabeck, voting should be done by each person, not a district. Joel, well, you have to do it for a district for congressional seats. Chuck, I voted no, but I have a hard time with this because it feels contrived and doesn't pass Brandy's "if your worst enemy had this power, would you be fine with it?" test. On the other hand, it makes sense to update things based on changes in populations. Yeah, and that's how I think about this, is if, look, I don't really support Republicans doing it either, but you have to think about that as a Republican. If you cheered Texas on, well, now you got a problem, because then California does it. The new governor of Virginia is supporting it, so problematic. All right, we'll get to comments coming up. Maybe I'll tell them about what a stupid morning I had. Who knows? If you're one of these people who's trying to flee the state of Washington, reach out, or you're just moving across the street, whatever, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Look, I don't want you to leave the state, but if you're going to, you might as well support one of our show sponsors on the way out. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have a lot of experience in Washington state and through all sorts of market ups and downs. It's what makes them so good at their job. Kyle R. gives them 5 stars. We had a great experience selling our house with Wes and team. Great communication, all the resources, tough negotiator, valuable advisor. He made our house shine and helped us get a tough property sold. Would 100% do business with him again. Kyle R., 5 stars. You love to see it. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and find out how you can go from sell with Wes to sold with Wes. You can peruse the listings that he's been able to sell for clients recently to see the results he's been able to achieve. And I think the smartest thing right now you can get from Wes is a free market analysis, because we know that there's a lot more homes going on the market because of the direction of the state. And when there's more homes going on the market, obviously that changes some calculations for, you know, how much work do you need to put into your house? How long will it take to sell? What can you get for it, et cetera? So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, into comments. I've maybe made the mistake of saying in my, in the live stream that I got sued today. It was only a matter of time before someone tried to sue me. I got sued in federal court, technically yesterday, but I just found out about it last night. It's a nonsense lawsuit. It'll be dismissed. But it's a crazy one, because remember that woman in Spokane who was charged and convicted of harassing me over, because I did, it was Deborah Yepez. Remember the video where she put out this crazy video on TikTok saying she was going to come to my house and beat my white ass or whatever it is? And because I had done coverage of her because she harassed this woman and her children who were trying to sign the Let's Go Washington initiative. She didn't like my coverage of it. So then she threatened to come to my home and to harm me. And so she was charged, prosecuted, pled guilty to harassment. Well, like a week ago, we were sitting here and I was like, I got a YouTube copyright claim. And I'm like, okay, usually those are a mistake because we have some sort of like license for something or whatever it is. No, it was from Deborah Yepez, and she was trying to get the videos of our coverage of her conduct taken down on YouTube, which of course is ridiculous because it's fair use. You can't like commit a crime on camera and then say, oh, you can't show the video of me committing a crime. It's part of the court record, so it's fair use. It's not a big deal. And I thought, okay, well, we'll just challenge the copyright claim and then it'll go away. No, she filed a federal copyright lawsuit and a federal defamation lawsuit against me, which again, this is an simple anti-slap case. You can't just do that. Everything that we said is protected by the First Amendment. So it's a totally bogus thing. I was kind of surprised she like went through the steps doing that and won't just like let it go. But the crappy thing about it is we have to hire an attorney to fight it. You still have to go through the stages of doing it. So it's going to end up costing us tens of thousands of dollars, which, you know, we'll ask the court to have her pay our attorney's fees, which is part of the law. But you think I'm going to be able to get any attorney's fees from her? Probably not. My guess is that she doesn't have the money.
I mean, it'll wait. It'll hang over her head for a long time.
So it's regardless. Just so silly that she would do that. I mean, why? And she has a child. Why would you do that to yourself and put yourself in a position where you're going to have a judgment
move
against you for tens of thousands of dollars? Just move on with your life. But anyway, this is what you deal with when you deal with people who aren't happy about the coverage that you've done of them. So, but I'm not super worried about it, but it is absolutely annoying, I will say. All right. Looking up for Jesus on the lawsuit against men in women's prisons. This is the kind of crap that really should bring this state down. WTF. But again, they lose the lawsuit. So what? It's taxpayer money. It's like there's no personal punishment for the leaders that have done this to these women.
Although, will it create, I mean, will it change the system? Will they stop allowing it? I mean, I got a posting the other day, that job that they have that manages people, they're hiring somebody that can manage all the transgender surgeries and advocating for the transgender inmates. Like that job's up for grabs again because apparently the last person didn't work out.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is a job and they're advocating for people and it continues. So maybe if there's some financial repercussion and they win in this case, then maybe that starts to go away and we stop paying for laser hair.
Something
removal.
Needs to happen because it's just so insane. Greg, it's like our state wants to promote rape and assault of women. Yeah. Carmine doesn't want to get killed in a male prison where they kill child predators. Yeah, that might be it. Like if you're a child predator in prison, life's not easy for you.
They want to have sex. They're in for life. Right. They want to have sex. That's all they want. But I think. And then I do think that there's a lot of people that don't agree with it that just aren't willing to speak out against it. And I don't like how many people can possibly think that this is actually a good idea.
Insane.
There cannot be that many people.
No, that would actually come out and vocally advocate for it.
And that's why they've served cease and desist. There's like they don't want anybody talking about this because they know it's wrong, but they're all just too scared for the like woke police to come and get them.
Yeah.
So it's just ridiculous.
Country guy, what idiot thought locking up a woman with a rapist was a good idea? I know. King County employee funneling cash to family. Big Princess says the mainstream media is leering. Yeah, they're leering. Leering to do their jobs and cover fraud. Watermelon Shug, the family that crimes together, something, something, something. Rick Johnson, there needs to be serious jail time for fraud. No deterrent. The fraud will continue. I agree. They have to go to jail, and then there has to be clawbacks. You have to, again, similar to this case we're dealing with, you have to put a judgment over their head to repay what they stole or what they misused or what they abused. Otherwise, what's the point?
She lost her job. She moves on to another job. Right. Okay.
Crazy.
Tries to get away with the same thing again.
Yeah. On Nick Hanauer being the world's biggest hypocrite, I don't give a chuck. $20 sponsoring the boop and hoping to buy some common sense for the state of Washington. Eric says, I'm just wondering when and if Boeing will leave. Lancelot Dufresne, Capital flights are lining up on the runway. Every plane that takes off from SeaTac has a little bit of money with it. Let's see. Smoke and Joe, Brandy, you should start a second channel of just unbelievable quips. The Dems offer you nonstop ammo to use. Just thinking. Yeah. Let's see. Feds raiding Minneapolis daycares. Haynes says Minnesota has been investigating fraud for 10 years. Investigating, never arresting. On the Supreme Court siding with Texas and the redistricting fight, Crafty Grandma Crispy, Texas and Florida have had massive inbound migration from blue states. Redistricting makes sense. And look, I get it that sometimes, and there is a process states have in place for mid-cycle redistricting, mm-hmm. if there's something significant. But the question is, are they gerrymandering, right? Is it a fair map? And ultimately, I think the Supreme Court will decide these. They, you know, greenlit California, they greenlit Texas. It doesn't look like Virginia is going to be able to be greenlit, but we'll see.
And that's just for, that's national, like congressional seats. But, yep. but I mean, it happened here. And
yes.
it will continue to be a thing. Right.
Yeah, when you control state government, you basically do anything you want. Mm-hmm. WAUP says gerrymandering is not the same as correcting redistricting based on voting population. And I totally understand that. Right. So I think that's a good clarification.
But that's the same. But, you know, we go based on morals. So we're saying, morally, do you think this should happen?
Yeah.
And we are, no. But, I mean, we can't compete. You can't compete unless you play on the same level, right? So if they're going to do it, all right, I guess they got to do
it.
I don't know how else you play this game.
Yeah, because if you just always do the right thing, then you lose, right? But technically, Texas did it first.
So, yeah. Yeah. In this case, but has it happened before? Yes.
Yeah. All right, Nicole, thank you. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. John Fetterman has become quite the frequent Fox News guest. Just strange times we're living in. But of course, the Democratic senator spitting more truth bombs. He was on Fox News post White House Correspondents Dinner Association shooting. And he made, again, common sense. You can't keep the Hilton safe because there's guests in there that you have to deal with. Maybe the ballroom isn't such a bad idea.
I really don't understand. The only thing that I could explain that it's the TDS, you know, for me. I mean, I was right there. I was one or two tables away from the front table with the president and the vice president thing. And I've witnessed this. But even before that even happened, I was struck by, my gosh, we have the entire, you know, the line of succession right there in a very small kind of, you know, area there. You know, we really have to just, again, turn that temperature down. I mean, you know, the president was shot in the head in my own state just back in Butler, too. People seem to, they forgot that, too. I never really had an issue with the ballroom before all that, but clearly what happened there, I can't imagine why we can't just agree. Like, look, I don't have to love everything about it. You know, we do need that kind of a facility. And, you know, the president may not even be in office when it's even finished, how it would it's done. But our country deserves that. And that's going to create a venue for more secure and inclusive and really more accessible for people.
Inclusive, a little weird. I don't know what that's about. But I mean, yeah, it's non-controversial. And he makes a good point that I haven't really thought about before is, will Trump even be in office when it's done? It's really not even a ballroom for him. It's a ballroom for future presidents, for future White House Correspondents Association dinners, and it's being funded with private money. I don't know if at this point, if there's any public funds, there might be some, but mostly private donations. There's nothing controversial about it. And I'm glad John Fetterman called it what it is. TDS. It's just TDS. All right. As you know, once a year, we do an undivided promo. I think the spring is a great time to do it. So if you've been freeloading and thinking, oh, you know, other people will subscribe, we need to grow and reach more people, and your subscriptions help with that. So right now, we have 30% off a year of undivided. Go to patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided and plug in the promo code USA30 and you'll get 30% off. Now you can get 30% off a single month, but I think that would be a waste of the promo. I would do 30% off for a whole year of undivided. And I think that's a pretty good deal to support the work we're doing to try to give common sense a comeback. So patreon.com/undivided, code USA30. All right, ending exactly on time today. That never happens. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We truly do. Well, I do. I can't speak for Nicole and how she feels, but I'm sure she feels the same way.
Very appreciative.
Very appreciative. That's it. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.